Good afternoon, boys and girls, moms and dads. It's Lounges. I'm back to give you another edition of Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be joined by phone by Jonathan and Leslie. You'll get to know them. They're members of the progressive hard rock band from Chicago called District 97. They're going to be coming to Northwest Indiana, and we're going to find out about the show. We're going to find out about the band. You're going to get to hear some of their music. If you like hard rock and you like progressive rock, be sure to stay tuned. That's the first half of today's program with District 97. Let's do what we always do and let the music do the talking. Let me introduce you to this great band from Chicagoland. This is a track that'll open your ears. It's called Open Your Eyes. District 97.
I know how crazy it is. It's love when it's the opposite. Confusing defenses for abandonment. Purple skin, you can't convince that you're fine. That you're fine. I know the story as well as you. Flames into ash and then nothing grew. Spreading your seeds is a futile activity. Nothing is worth all this. What if I stage an invasion and come galloping in? Turn off the cartoons and add a letter to signature. You would be rid of this life. Threatening as much as it hurts like a bandit, sting for a sec. Without any open, double check. Light as a feather, not so frightening. Now you can go where you wanted to. Now you can take what you wanted to. Out of this life before it passes you. Strong, I come on. But stay on this path, and soon you will be gone. I've already tried to sit idly by, and then one day I wrote this song.
Love that sound. That is the sound of District 97, and they are a band out of Chicagoland that we've been hearing a lot about lately. They've been touring all over the place. I guess you'd call it progressive hard rock. It's got a lot of different structures in there, and it certainly does rock. Let's find out what they call it. We've got Jonathan Shang. He's the drummer of the band. We've got Leslie Hunt, the beautiful voice you just heard, and they are joining us right now by phone here on Midwest Beat. Jonathan, Leslie, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
I've been hearing about you guys for at least 2 years from Eric Holmquist and from Andy Sutton and from all my music friends here in Northwest Indiana that say you've got to get these guys on the show. You've got to get something going with them. And Leslie, I'm glad you're feeling better. Last year we were supposed to have you on when you did the Prog Rock Fest. I think it was at Reggie's. And you came down with a really bad cold, as I recall. And we had to postpone it. So I'm glad you're here today.
Yeah, me too. I'm feeling great. So far, so good in this cold season. So.
Yeah, this is a rough one.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about how you guys all got together. Now, Leslie, I first was introduced to you through your work with Jim Peterick. And what you're doing now with District 97 is a lot different.
Yeah, it is. Wow. So, it's a lot different. We all met in music school. And it's a lot more complex, for sure. There's a lot more harmonic complexity there, the stuff I was doing with Jim.
This is a lot heavier, as I mentioned. First of all, how did you get into music? You also had a little run there on American Idol that got you some traction, so to speak, in the business, as well as working with Jim. And then we're going to find out how you and Jonathan and the gang got together here. But tell me a little bit, Leslie, first about you and your vocals. When did you start singing and what brought you to music?
I started singing when I was really young. I believe around 3 or 4, I started really showing an interest in music. I started playing piano and singing, and my parents noticed that I was memorizing lyrics really well, and they also noticed that I had perfect pitch when I was really young, and so my dad used to work with me on that, and they found ways for me to perform in various ways in church, and I was also doing musicals. I started doing professional musical theater at a dinner theater out here in St. Charles called Pheasant Run.
Okay.
And I started doing professional theater by the time I was 10, and I did a couple year-long productions over there, and then I started writing music in high school, and then Jim Peterick got my first little demo, and then he started mentoring me as a songwriter. So I never really entertained the thought of doing anything else with my life, which I feel really fortunate to have found so early.
Okay. So, well, it's been... What, 12 years since American Idol?
11.
11?
Yeah, so it was in 2000. Oh, yeah, it has been 12. You're right, it has.
What was the value of doing a show like that? You know, a lot of times people say, oh, those music shows, they're, you know, it's a shortcut to celebrityism, and then most of them that are on there, you never hear from again. You have bounced back, obviously, from doing a different style of music into something totally unique mm-hmm. here. What was the advantages and disadvantages of American Idol? Is it an albatross, or is it something that really has helped?
You know, I guess that show can do it depends on where you're at in your journey. It came along at a perfect time where I had the talent, I had the resources. What I lacked was confidence, and what I lacked was performance experience. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was very beneficial because it exposed the ways that I still needed to grow to reach a certain level of musicianship and like a cohesive performance sort of experience. I hadn't done any sort of singing without playing piano at the same time, so when I was on American Idol, you still couldn't play instruments, so I felt very, very awkward, and it helped me see myself and be like, oh, okay, so I have not nailed this aspect of it yet. Let's get to work. And then it also kind of, you know, when you have the name American Idol just anywhere in your bio, people go, ooh, it's just like a little ooh. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's helped some of my, you know, story, some things that I've done rise to the top of a press release, you know,
right,
because of just that little buzzword. But otherwise, it wasn't really an albatross because I didn't make it really far. I was only top 20, so I didn't really make it that far to where it would have hindered me in any way, you know, because they were kind of like, thanks for doing the show, bye. They didn't, you know, they weren't like keeping me from being able to pursue other opportunities or anything.
Right. So it was a good experience overall for you.
I mean, it was very traumatic, and, like, I think that I learned that I needed to get thicker skin because of, you know, you read about yourself online, and that was kind of the very, very beginning of social media and all of that. So mm-hmm. I was just reading what people were saying about me, and I think my ego took a blow, but it was definitely for the better, you know. So it made me thicker skin, which I needed to be anyway.
Yeah. Your voice is extremely strong, very powerful voice. Who were those that you... I don't want to say emulated, but basically who influenced you as far as your vocal style? And did you have any training at all?
I've had some training, but I never, I think it was all pretty natural for me overall. My mom is a singer, and she was singing, teaching a lot of voice lessons out of the house. I would say that, like, Disney movies were my initial entrance into, like, the power of music and the voice and how it can all... you know, and I was getting goosebumps. And but then I think, like, as an older person, Bjork was a big influence of mine when I was kind of learning about my own belt.
Okay.
And also just some of the 80s rocker chicks like Ann Wilson and just like some of those.
I can hear
Gwen Stefani was a big one.
Okay, I can hear the Ann Wilson in there. I can also hear a little Amy Lee from Evanescence in there.
All right. I like that. She's excellent. Thank you.
Okay. And one more for you, and then we're going to jump over to Jonathan real quick here. That is, when you did work with Jim Peterik, of course, Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter here in Chicago. Everybody knows him. Eye of the Tiger, Survivor, Ides of March, yada, yada. What did you take away from your relationship with Jim as far as being mentored by him?
I learned he does a lot of co-writing, and he does a lot, you know, he's just constantly in that songwriter headspace.
Mm-hmm.
He came along at a perfect time in high school when I was learning what my relationship was to my muse, and he taught me how to have patience with it. And he also taught me the benefit of editing an existing idea that you might have. You know, just because you have 8 great verses written doesn't mean that you use them all.
Right.
You know, so he taught me, like, how to be a good editor. And I would say that my idea of, like, how to keep someone's attention and not let anything go on for too long was really benefited. And also, I mean, I still have a relationship with him. Just about a couple weeks ago, we did the Jim Peterik World Stage Show, and I've been a part of that. I did the very first one 20 years ago.
That's when I saw you first.
Yeah.
I was there for that.
I mean, we just did another one. We just did the 20th one, you know, or the 20th year, so... Yeah,
wow.
He's still a great musical, you know, relationship of mine. And he still gets me in the studio to demo some new songs, and he'll shop for different artists. And yeah, we're still definitely in touch.
Jonathan, let's switch over to you. I understand you have been recognized by a lot of the major drumming publications. Modern Drummer in particular has singled you out as a talent to watch. How long have you been drumming, and who are some of the drummers that you look to and maybe were influenced by coming up the ranks?
Yeah, well, similar to Wesley, the music bug hit me around the age of 4. And there's these old photos of me with this little plastic drum kit around that age.
Gotta love those.
Yeah. the Beatles was the first thing I heard. Rubber Soul, when the CDs were first coming out around 1988. And Ringo would have been the first drumming influence. But then the next one that hit me really hard was John Bonham and the whole Led Zeppelin catalog. And the Bruford album, One of a Kind, was just some of the first music I ever heard, because that's my dad's favorite album. So I grew up hearing that. And then when I got into Yes, I made the connection between that and Bill Bruford. And Yes was the same guy, so that kind of set me off exploring his whole musical journey. So he was another huge influence. Phil Collins, all his stuff with Genesis and Brand X. Neil Peart, and yeah, Carl Palmer too. And then also, I did go to school for jazz, so I listened to a lot of jazz and a lot of jazz players like Jimmy Williams, Elvin Jones.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites as well.
There's a lot of jazz in District 97's music, far from being a jazz group, obviously, but you can hear a little bit of that jazz and some of the progressions you do and some of the dynamics of the song work, per se. Who are the songwriters of this group?
Well, it started out that I was the person who wrote pretty much everything. So our first album, I wrote every song in there. But after that, it started to get more collaborative.
Are you guys hearing like a ton of background noise?
Yeah, it sounds like there's trucks going by or something. What are you guys in a quiet place?
Yeah, I am. I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
I don't hear that.
Okay, now it's gone. Let's continue and hope for the best.
So anyway, the question. I kind of forgot the question. Oh, this primary songwriter. Okay, so yeah, I guess I still tend to write a bit more. But like this new album that we are currently getting mixed, everybody brought in at least one song, and we've all kind of put a stamp on each other's other songs and let's see what most of the lyrics and a lot of vocal melodies. So it's become a pretty collaborative process.
Now, when is the new album coming out?
We don't know for sure just yet. We're hoping for May. So I think May is somewhat likely, but it could be a little later in the year, depending on how things shake out. But we're hoping to have it all mixed and mastered, hopefully by the end of February.
Okay. Now, what's the title on this one?
Oh, well, I don't know if we're quite ready to reveal that.
Oh, okay. Yet. Okay, very cool. How did how long has the band actually been together? And Leslie, how long have you been in it? And what was the impetus for the two of you guys joining forces? Why is Leslie the right voice for this project?
Jonathan, do you want to take this? Or do you want me to?
I can take it. Yeah, just also I have to hang up around 12:30. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I should probably like talk a little bit here. So the band started in 2006 as an instrumental quartet. And then I started getting the bug to write songs with vocals. So at first I was the one singing that stuff, but it was really because of her American Idol appearance that she kind of came back on my radar. I could just sense that like she could handle what I had in mind. And I just liked that her voice was capable of a kind of a wide range of delivery. Like she could be sensitive and she could also belt stuff out.
Right.
Yeah, there was just a quality to her vocal timbre that I thought would work with harder edge music. And turns out I was right.
When did she join the group? When did you bring her into the fold?
Oh, that was 2008, like summer 2008.
Okay.
So it's been over 10 years now.
And the band had been together a couple of years prior to that, doing the quartet stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Always District 97?
Yeah, it was called that from the beginning.
All right. Give me a little highlight here before you have to go about working with some of the guys in King Crimson. I understand there was a relationship there with you, Jonathan, and you guys kind of teamed up on some projects.
Right. Well, it was mainly John Wetton, though. I am. There are a couple videos online of me with Bill Bruford, and I do have a relationship with him still. But, yeah, John Wetton was the main that we became close to. So... yeah, he had come to hear some of our music, and he liked it. And so we started up an email correspondence. And then I wrote a song called The Perfect Man, which I don't know, you might play that at some point today.
Right.
And it had like a male and a female vocal part. And at first, Leslie would just sing the whole thing and put a hat on for the part where it was the male part, which was... H.H. Holmes, the Chicago serial killer who was active around the World's Fair.
Right.
So when it came time to record that, our former bass player, Patrick, suggested to me that I should ask John if he would sing that part. And I didn't think he would do it, but I did ask him, and he agreed to it right away.
Wow.
And so we sent him the track, and he sent it back, and he did a really great job. So that came on our second album, Trouble with Machines. And after that, we were going to Europe for the first time. And we asked him if he'd want to team up and do that song with us live, as well as a selection of his work with King Crimson, which he hadn't sang in about 40 years or so. So yeah, that all came together. We did some European shows, and then... later we did shows here in the U.S. and we recorded a live album called One More Red Night, which is from our last show with John, which was at Reggie's in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really rewarding. And unfortunately, he became ill shortly after that and passed away. So we didn't get the chance to work with him again.
But, yeah, definitely a lot of treasured memories there.
So is John the voice we'll be hearing when we play Perfect Young Man in just a little bit? Is that the recording you sent me?
Yeah. So John sings the part in the middle, and he also added some harmonies, too, later.
Wow. Wow. You guys have a big show coming up here nearby in Hobart at the Art Theater, along with Stop Drop Rewind. And tell me a little bit about that show, and then I'm going to let you go, Jonathan. Can you stay with us, Leslie, for a little longer?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Tell us about this show, and of course, you're doing Cruise to the Edge, which I also want to touch on. And again, Jonathan, if you have to go, just let us know. But talk a little bit about the Cruise to the Edge and then also the Hobart show that's going to bring you here to Northwest Indiana for the first time in a while.
Yeah, well, it'll be our first time in Hobart, so we'll be playing the stuff we're going to play on the cruise. We're also in Chicago on February 1st in Martyrs. Hobart is the 31st, Thursday. So, yeah, it'll be a sneak peek at a lot of our new music and some of our older fan favorites. And kind of a way to help us, you know, get in tip-top shape for the cruise as well. And the cruise is an amazing experience. It's, you know, about 2,000 diehard music fans and, I don't know, something like 30 great bands, including a lot of legendary musicians.
Right.
Like, All of Yes is on there, and Steve Hackett from Genesis, and Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater.
That,
and so, yeah, it's just incredible to be able to, rub shoulders with.
Right. Yeah, some of the artists that are on here we've had on the show, Martin Barr, Steve Hackett, Carl Palmer, Saga, those guys have all been on the show in the past and amazing talents. I didn't know Focus was even still together. That kind of blew my mind to see them on the bill.
We did the cruise in 2017 and Focus was a favorite of mine. We were talking about drummers and Pierre van der Linden is definitely one of my favorites too. So it was so cool to get to hear him. Live because I never really expected that was going to happen.
Wow. January 31st, District 97, along with Stop, Drop, Rewind and Species, and that is at the Hobart Art Theater, which is just two doors down from my record store. So I hope you guys will stop by and say hello and maybe hang out and meet a few of the shoppers there right down the street. It'd be great.
Yeah, I'd love to. So, yeah, unfortunately, I have to get going, but you guys have a great conversation.
Thank you, Jonathan, for joining us, and we'll see you on the 31st when you get here to Hobart.
All right, thanks.
All righty, bye-bye. Leslie is staying with us. Let's sample something else from the band, and then we'll be back with Leslie to talk. Again, let you hear what you're going to hear on these shows that we're talking about at Martyrs and at the Art Theater, and maybe at the cruise if you're going to go to that. This is Takeover, District 97. We'll be back with Leslie Hunt after this.
You would if you thought you could. It doesn't mean that you should. A glass or two might do you good. Not sure you can stop it too.
That's new music, District 97. I think it's new music. We'll find out. Leslie Hunt, the vocalist of the group, is with us. We just had Jonathan Shang on. Jonathan had to go, but Leslie's with us. Leslie, is that one of the new tracks, Takeover?
No, that's off of our last album.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's not one of the new ones. We're still in the mixing phase of our new album, so it's not done yet.
All right. We were mentioning in the beginning of the interview how this is so much different than where you first started. This sound, was it hard to embrace, or is this a natural progression of where you were destined to be? Because it's a different style of music, and you certainly sound very comfortable in it.
Thanks. You know, I am. I grew up listening to a lot of Led Zeppelin, and my dad is a free jazz musician, and so with tons of Frank Zappa, and just really, you know, kind of a little bit more out there, improvisational, avant-garde stuff that I was exposed to. And then, and I also just, District 97 is amazing because it's got all of the things that I love, which is high chromatics. It's extremely physical. So, like, as a performer, there's so much that my body is inspired to do to go along with this music, especially with the changing meters and the, you know, just really, really powerful, like, hit you in your gut kind of guitar and bass. And it's just so rhythmic and powerful and also just vocally, it's like, it's been an amazing challenge, but it does feel very comfortable for me.
Now, do you still have a parallel solo career as well? I know you were doing some of your own albums for a while there.
Yeah, I was, and I haven't in a while. I'm still writing, and my focus right now is definitely more District 97 and also my job, which is to be I'm in an event band in, you know, that is in around Chicago, and I'm the leader of it, so that's a nice, you know, way to be a musician and stay local.
Right. And make a living.
And make a living, which is great.
That's
and
always important.
That's a great company. I've got benefits and, you know, I've got two kids. And so, you know, it's like I am a musician full time, but I'm not like full time touring.
Okay.
You know, so I unfortunately District 97 suffers as a result of that because we can't go on extremely long tours, for months on end, like we probably should be if we really wanted to get to the next level, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's rather unfortunate in that way, but we've all got to do what we got to do, and we're still doing great, all things considered, so.
You mentioned your dad was a freeform jazz player, and you mentioned Frank Zappa, and it's interesting because this past summer, I had a chance to go backstage with my friend Paul Rogers, and he introduced me to Jeff Beck, and of course, Vinny Colaiuta was drumming for Jeff, and you've played with him, and he is like the most amazing drummer ever as a Zappa fan. I was more impressed to meet Vinny than I was anybody else. What was it like to work with him? He seemed like a really nice guy.
Oh, he's wonderful. My producer had, a longstanding relationship with him and asked him to come out, you know, and just kind of track basics for a couple days. So I had Vinny Colaiuta in the studio for 2 days. And it was just so amazing to show him these songs. You know, I showed him a couple versions of the band that I had kind of assembled around Chicago, and he listened to it, and some of it, he was like, yeah, I like that treatment. But then some of it, he's like, well, what about this? And he was kind of giving, you know, the songs a lot of their flavor based on his interpretation of really just a piano vocal situation, you know. And then to watch that happen in real time alongside Vale Johnson, who is at the time most notably had played with Kenny G, but he had a lot of other, you know, he's one of those extremely heavy bass guy.
Well, he had done some stuff with Herbie, hadn't he? Herbie Hancock?
Yep.
Okay,
yeah.
that's where I knew the name from. Okay.
That's the most, I should probably come out with Herbie before the other one when I'm explaining who Vale is, because that's definitely
wow.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Now you've got this cruise coming up that we were talking about. Are you obviously looking forward to this? Who are some of your favorites that are on the bill? And what was it like last year to be part of this?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the fact that this year we get to, so we were on it a couple years ago.
Okay.
Not last year. But a couple years ago we had two sets and they were pretty close together. They were like, we had one the first night and then our only other one was the next afternoon on the same stage. So that was kind of hard to conjure that energy in the same venue. I'm really looking forward to playing a bigger stage this year at a better slot and like two performances kind of a little more spread out, which I think is going to serve us really well.
Okay. Now, the cruise is happening February 4th through 9th, and it takes off from Tampa, correct?
Correct.
All right. So that's going to be exciting. Week and a half away, something like that. It's coming up fast.
Yeah, right around the corner.
So you're probably packing by now.
I'm considering, I'm kind of starting to think outfit.
There you go. Before then, though, January 31st, you'll be here, the Hobart Art Theater. It's a 7 p.m. show with Stop Drop Rewind. They've been on the show many times, Andy Sutton and the guys, good friends of the program here. Species, I'm not familiar with. They are the third band. What's the billing order here? Who's going on? Who's closing? Who's in the middle?
I am not the right person to ask that.
Okay.
I can definitely look it up. I'm not as managerial in this band as I am in other aspects of my life, and I love it that way.
Okay.
But I am a little clueless. Sometimes I feel like I show up, and I'm like, I'll just show up when I'm told to.
You guys
so
are also,
I'll have to look it up.
I think, doing the same lineup at Martyrs on February 1st. Is that correct? I know Stop Drop's on there.
Okay, cool. Whatever you say.
Like you said, I'll just be clueless today. That's okay. That's good because you get to focus on the performing.
Exactly. I can't be bothered with these details.
All right.
I will find out who's playing and hopefully not mispronounce the names on
all
stage.
Right. Jumping back to the new album that's coming out, I know we don't have a title or a release date yet, but since you are in the mixing stages, you've obviously recorded a lot of or all of the material and you're familiar with it. How has this album progressed or evolved from what we've heard from you in the past?
I am going to say with utter and complete confidence that this band has grown exponentially. The energy in the band, to say that it's collaborative is such an understatement because it's hard to describe, but there's such an edge now, both sonically. I think that the two new members are more focused on sound design, and so there's so much thoughtful production just in the choices that they're making. Sonically, and also just the hooks are really, really strong. The lyrics are just some of the ones I'm the most proud of anything I've ever done. I cannot wait for this album to come out. I've never been more excited about a musical accomplishment than this album. So
are you the primary lyricist then, since you are the vocalist?
It seems that, yes, I wrote lyrics on every song besides one on this album,
okay.
And I wrote a ton of vocal melodies too. So
all right. Something
have
else.
A lot more to do with it.
Something else I noticed on your Facebook page, and by the way, you can follow District 97 on Facebook. You can also follow them at District 97. Is it .com/.org? I can't remember.
.net.
There's so many dots out there now. Connect those dots and find them. District 97's out there. But one of the things I noticed while perusing your sites is that you've got this 10-year anniversary release, a live concert album, so to speak, but it's available in limited amounts. Well, tell us about that, and will it be available at these shows we're talking about at Martyrs and at the Art Theater?
I believe that we only made 100, and we're trying to sell them on the cruise. They will not be for sale at our shows. And we also we have something called Inside the Vault Club, and it's like a subscription service, and for just a small monthly fee, I can't remember off the top of my head what it is, but it's definitely under $10 a month. You get like exclusive stuff from us, pretty fun.
So it's a fan club kind of thing.
It's a fan club kind of thing, but it also kind of helps. It helps us, because when we tour, not every show we do has a good guarantee, and so it's hard sometimes to make these tours happen financially, but it does help us you know, as a band, achieve the things we want, to have a little, have a little nest egg like that. And we mean, and we do mean little, but it is helpful.
100 copies, though. I mean, you guys have a pretty good fan base worldwide. And some of this was recorded in the Netherlands. Some of it was recorded here in America. It's a 12-song, as I'm looking it up now, a 12-song collection. Why only 100? Why not 500 or 1,000? I mean, give us all a chance to get one.
I know. I don't really know. It's possible that we could do another run if it, you know, if it goes way, if they fly off right away. This is another Jonathan-ism. So, you know, he does all of our booking. He does all of our, he manages just about everything. So,
okay.
Maybe you guys could have another phone call.
All right. I've got to say the cover art on this limited edition is amazing. I don't even know how to describe it. It's got like an octopus laying on a balloon with like gears in it. And it's just so, it's pastel, but it's really badass. I mean, I would love to see that on a wall lithograph. I would buy that and frame it just for the artwork. I mean, it's very cool.
It's, you know what it is? It's the combination of all three of our albums thus far, in the subjects of them. So we've got the balloon because of Hybrid Child, the little girl holding the balloon, and then Trouble with Machines is the guy looking into the suitcase full of gears.
Mm-hmm.
And then our last one, In Vaults, was like had an underwater sort of like end of the world vibe, steampunk kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's very steampunk. Now that you mention that, I can pull the steampunk out of there.
Yeah,
I like your stage outfitting too in your videos. Again, a lot different than what you used to wear back in the day when I saw you with Jim on the first early world tours, tours.
I was 16 when I did that one, so you know.
Okay, I guess you dressed appropriately then.
Yeah, that was not like an artistic statement when I was 16. I was just like, oh, what are clothes? Oh, it's not a hoodie? I don't understand this.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But you certainly have come a long way. I'm very, very happy that we finally connected, and you're doing Chicagoland proud. I mean, you have done very well, and you're shining a spotlight on so many other talents here just by the success you guys have had, and you in particular.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's been such a wonderful experience. I feel super lucky to be able to sing in this band because it's pretty awesome.
So I take it it's safe to say that since American Idol, you have found your place as far as confidence, because you certainly look very confident when you're doing your thing on stage.
Oh yes, yeah, I could sing and dance at the same time and balance my checkbook. Like, I could do it all at once. So it's very, very comfortable for me. If anything, I feel like that's when my true self emerges, and then the person that walks off the stage, I'm like trying to figure out what to say. So
are you still playing piano on stage?
I am.
And in the studio?
I play piano about every day.
Okay.
I'm not really, I do perform as a solo act, you know, if I need to, I'll pick up some local little bar, wine bar gigs here and there, playing piano and singing and playing guitar and mostly doing covers, but throwing some originals in the mix. But, I don't play guitar. I don't play any instruments in District 97. I just sing and dance.
Okay. When you perform out here, you're doing a solo acts and with your corporate band that does the big shows, how do we find you? You're not on District 97 for those. How do we find you online?
Yeah, my event band, it's called Entourage, and the name of the company is Arlen Music Productions. So it's ARLEN, arlenmusic.com, and then there are 5 dance bands within the company, and then ours is the 8-piece, and you can contact the office and book us if there's any brides listening to the brides and grooms, or, anybody looking to throw a gala,
mm-hmm.
that's our market. All private events, pretty fun.
All right, now let's say we're doing a wine party, and we want to get Leslie and the piano and do some kind of low key thing. How does that work? Is there a solo page for you?
There is on Facebook. I do read the messages. I don't really post stuff on there right at the moment. I'm not really promoting anything as a solo artist. And
okay.
When I do a local show, I don't tend to promote there. I'm probably a little more active on Instagram and my personal page, which you can also follow on Facebook.
All right. And is your solo stuff still available? Can we buy your albums?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're all on iTunes. If you want to, you know, it's hard to get physical at this point, but you could definitely download the album off iTunes and, you know, sample it on Spotify, if you will, and then buy it on iTunes.
All right. Very good. Is there anything, Leslie, we haven't touched on that you'd like to let people know, either about yourself or about District 97 or any of the shows coming up or the new release, anything, any charity work you guys are doing? I mean, free format here. You can talk about whatever you want if we haven't covered something.
Yeah. Well, you know, another thing that I do that I'm pretty active with is I work with kids and I'm a mentor musically. I have like a music school out of my house. So I teach voice and piano and ukulele and guitar out of my house, and I mentor kids as songwriters and performers, and you know, not always kids, but right now it is. So that's just another thing I do if any locals are listening.
Music is so important to young people, and I'm a big advocate of music in schools. I'm married to an educator. I grew up non-athletic, so even though I can't play a lick on an instrument and nobody wants to hear me sing, music has been my salvation, my island to go to when I needed it. And there's so many kids out there that that aren't athletic, that need music. And we've cut the music out of the schools in so many districts and so many places across the country. How important was school music programs to you? Would we be talking today if you hadn't had a music teacher in, say, third grade or seventh grade?
I think we probably would be, just because I come from such a big family of musicians, and I already knew before. But I would say that the positive, I had so much support, and my teachers in every respect saw, you know, what I was working with musically and my abilities, and they really nurtured that and really encouraged me. And I think that did not hurt matters at all, you know, because I never thought that it would be impossible to make a living exclusively as a musician. And I've only done that. So I think that it's because I was really encouraged both by my family and my educators.
Okay.
Yeah. And I had mentors too, you know, like strong singer-songwriter women that I looked up to that I had, you know, that I could pick their brains, and very powerful.
When did you write your first song, speaking of songwriting? At what point, when you were already singing since the childhood, but when did you sit down and write your first song? And when you look at that or listen to it now, is it something you say, yeah, I was on the mark, or is it cringeworthy?
So I think the first song that I wrote that had lyrics was about my stuffed animals, and how, like, even if you don't love them anymore, like, you shouldn't be rough on them, and, like, you should just, like, still be nice to them, even though you don't love them anymore. I think I was in elementary school. That was my first song with lyrics. And then I started writing instrumental songs on the piano. And then when I got into high school, I joined this band with my friend. I was a freshman in high school. And I joined a band with, like, my four best guy friends. And then I started writing songs for that band. So I guess when I was a freshman, I really started writing songs, like, one after another.
Okay. What's your best advice to the young students that you mentor now? What is the one or two best pieces of advice you can offer them if they're serious about a music career?
I think what is often overlooked when it comes to kids and confidence is there's these little voices inside of us at all times after we do things or say things. And I almost conduct my lessons as a bit of therapy, because if I see somebody come into my studio and their editor is on overdrive, you know, like, oh, I'm sorry, sorry. Oh, sorry, my shoes are wet. Oh, you know, sorry, I was a little loud. Oh, sorry, my voice cracked. You know, we put a little chair out and we're like, hey, okay, so there's this voice inside of you that needs to, like, kind of back off for this lesson. Just sit that guy in the chair. Like, thank you for your service. Thank you for trying to protect me from doing something embarrassing, but we don't need you right now, but we'll let you know.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Like, yeah, so I mean, there's so much self-consciousness. You know, sometimes these girls are so talented, but they can't even sing in the same room as anybody else. And so they have to sing in the other room, and you know, I turn up the mic and hopefully hear them. But yeah, it's intense.
I've seen
kind of treat those voices like they can be removed at will.
I've seen that with some different vocal groups in the high school level that I have worked with at different festivals and things. You get them in the room and talk to them and they can belt out a song. You get them on stage, you have to crank the mics up to the point of almost distortion where you pick up all the background because they don't project. It's like, what's wrong? Mm-hmm. I know you can let this out. How do you get the young people to actually project? I mean, that seems to be the thing. They have a great voice, but they don't sing from the diaphragm. They don't push it out. What's the secret mm-hmm. to that?
I'm lucky to where my music room is like my living room, and I have an upright piano, but it overlooks a pond. And so there's these things that we pick out, and we kind of stand side by side, and we put our hands on our, you know, lower bellies, and kind of we take a little deep breath, and we try to hit that target, and then we sometimes we'll open up the screen door because a lot of these girls feel like they can't exist big. And I do work mainly with females.
Okay.
I don't know why. There's no reason really. It's just that's just how it worked out. So we just kind of, there's a lot that can be done when you kind of bend your knees, kind of get into it. You can actually support your diaphragm with your pelvic floor, and it's such a physical act, singing. It really is. And I noticed that after I sing a lot, if I get a really, really stiff neck, like all of my muscles are engaged.
You are listening to Midwest Beat here on 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio. We're talking with Leslie Hunt. She is the lead singer, vocalist, frontwoman of District 97. She's also got a solo project, some other things that we've been talking about. And you can catch them on January 31st here in Northwest Indiana at the Art Theater. They're also coming up at the Martyrs Club and then doing the big cruise. And keep up with them at district97.net. Leslie's out there on Facebook, District 97. Sevens on Facebook. No reason you can't follow them. And Leslie, one parting thing, and that is you mentioned that you're from a musical family. Your dad's a professional musician. You are a professional musician. You mentioned you're a mom. Are your kids turning to music? Is this something that you're seeing living on, a legacy of the family?
Yeah, you know, I let my kids self-direct a lot. And so my son showed at a really young age, I think before he was even 2 years old, probably he was about a year and a half, and he started really gravitating towards the drums already. And so now he's three and he's a prodigy when it comes to drumming. And it's just incredible because I don't know anything about drums. Even though my dad is a drummer, I couldn't like sit down and play a great beat for you. Like, it'd be really hard,
mm-hmm.
but he's just so good, and he works at it so hard. He plays so many hours a day, and just that's his thing. And then my daughter seem to also have perfect pitch, and they can both sing very well. But my daughter really doesn't feel interested in it, but she's very natural. Okay. My daughter's 9.
And how old's your son now?
Very natural.
He's three. Three, and he's already keeping the beat. Wow.
He can play whole songs, the whole forms and dynamics and everything. So crazy.
So is he like hanging out by Jonathan at the shows?
He's never seen District 97, actually.
Okay.
That he can remember. He toured with us when he was an infant, both in Europe and on the East Coast, but he doesn't remember that.
Well, we're obviously going to be hearing a lot from them down the road. And, of course, yourself just starting your career on a big level at this point. You're getting out there, you're touring, and we're going to hear a lot more from District 97. What's the next plan? The album is coming out, is there? And you mentioned because of being a mom, you can't do the whole world tour thing. But what's the marketing plan once the album hits? Are you going to be on the road doing festivals or anything this summer?
Yeah, we have some stuff booked. We're gonna go. We're doing the Montreal Marillion Weekend in May, and then or is that June? Oh boy, I'm the worst. And then we're also gonna be in Europe in October. We're not really sure how we're gonna go about. We're still exploring some options when it comes to releasing the record, and so we still don't really know when that's gonna happen, but. But we're being very thoughtful about it, and we are working on it every single day. There's information being exchanged amongst the group, and you know, we're working. We're just—it's all about getting the album out at this point, and then hopefully promoting it. I can tour. I just, you know, some of these bands are on tour for months on end, and I can't do that because am pretty much anchored here every weekend.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, we could tour and then I'll like fly back for Saturday and then I'll join them again.
Well, you got to recharge your batteries with your kids when they're that little. I've worked with a lot of performers who are new parents, and they're like, we're on the road for 6 weeks. I'm having a kid fix. And who's got a kid I can hug, you know, kind of thing backstage.
Right. Yeah.
That's
super
I can
hard.
Totally understand that.
Yeah.
We're gonna let you go here, but we're going to play The Perfect Young Man, and then we're going to bring on Eric Holmquist, who is a percussionist and drum tech with the band Kansas, who is very close to District 97. And actually, like I said, I had known you through Jim Peterick, but I came to know District 97 through Eric, and he just chimed in here on Facebook and said, hey, I'd love to add something to the show. So we're going to get him on board here in just a bit.
Oh, but cool.
The Perfect Young Man, it's a 10-minute long song. It's a great song, of course, about a serial killer, not a great topic, but tell me about the song and your part in it. Now, I know you were singing John Wenton, the late great John Wenton from King Crimson and Asia is on this. It seemed to be a song that was very important to Jonathan, the drummer, who had to leave early, but what's your take on this song? Tell us a little about what your thoughts are.
This song is really cool. I'm the ingenue. I'm playing the role of one of his victims.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of follows the psychology of what some of these women went through or claimed to, that he's so charming. He's got all this, he's a doctor. He loves me so much. Oh my gosh. And then next thing you know, she's in a cellar and she dies, So it's like, Jonathan has, he is very good at these theatrical numbers, which I think really go nicely alongside some of our other songs that are a little more straight ahead in like a rock approach.
Mm-hmm.
But he does these songs. He writes these songs that are just so they're like little mini musicals,
Mm-hmm. Is there a video for this?
No, there's no video for this.
It sounds like it would be a really good conceptual mini film, an indie film, so to speak, like a 10-minute, 20-minute video here.
I mean, there's a bunch. Yeah, his songs would work for that. Some of them would. Yeah.
Well, H.H. Really cool. Holmes is the killer in question. He was around when the World Fair was here in Chicago, and he was kind of that era's Ted Bundy, very charming, very seductive. And Leslie Hunt, our guest, plays the sad victim of his charm. So we're going to play this. Leslie, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We'll see
really
you
appreciate it.
When you get to Hobart.
Okay,
I'll make
good.
A point
Looking
to come down
to
and say hello.
Oh, that'd be great. It would be great to meet you in person.
All right. District 97, this is the song we've been talking about, The Perfect Young Man. Watch out for him, girls.